Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoSilicast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, October 7th, 2011, and this is show number 333. Well, this was a pretty sad week, that's for sure. I got to tell you, I'm really glad that this show is being recorded 4 days after Steve Jobs died. So many people broadcasted that night. I don't know how they did it. I was a quivering pile of jello. I was reduced to tears all night long. I couldn't even speak a full sentence without falling apart. Steve and I watched the live Twit coverage, and I was so impressed by Sarah Lane's composure throughout such a difficult evening. You know, you could hear it in her voice, how much it was affecting her. Her voice was kind of low, and it was a very, very different Sarah Lane, but she did not break down, not until the very end when Leo asked her for a final word. She was such a professional. I could never have done that. I had trouble just watching her without crying. You know, I'm not a big baby either. I was raised by men, you know, stiff upper lip and all that. I don't cry hardly ever. I got to tell you, I felt badly for my husband, Steve, because, you know, he did a great job of comforting me, but it's not a role that he gets to play very often, luckily for him. I have no idea why it got to me so much. You know, I mean, of course, I'm a fanboy, but it was much more than that. I didn't feel like I'd lost a friend, like some people said. It was more just like there was this big hole. Something huge in my life was gone. You know, maybe that dent Steve Jobs wanted to make in the universe. It seems to me he succeeded at it. I want to walk down memory lane just a little bit here. In 1984, Steve and I went over to our friend Calvin Wong's house to see his home computer, something completely unheard of in that day and age. It was a Mac 128K. One of the most dramatic things that happened that night was when Calvin played Money for Nothing by Dire Straits on his Mac. When we got home, Steve said, "We have to have one of those." By the time we were ready, the 512K Fat Macs were out. We got the computer, a carrying case that we actually ended up using, a box of 400 megabyte single-sided floppies that cost us $100, in other words, $10 a piece. We got a dot matrix printer. I remember we specifically went for the wide format 15-inch one. I think it was 15 inches, just in case we ever needed it, which we never did. We also got a chess game on the floppy. Out the door, $3,000 in 1984 dollars. I should have checked that out with cost of money and see what that's actually worth today. Well, at one point early on, Steve figured out the sheet music on his own to the tune of Axel F., the theme song from the movie Beverly Hills Cop. That made him really, really happy when he did that. Since then, the only computers in our home that we've used by choice have been Macs. I think happy is actually what really makes these Apple products stand out. I remember the first time I plugged in my new red iPod Nano. I'd had the original black one before that. When iTunes first launched, it showed the actual red Nano on the screen. You know, that made me really happy. It was just this stupid little thing. It was like I plugged in and I went, "Oh, look, it's red, like my red Nano." I was all happy about it. Now, does somebody just say, "Hey, I've got time on my hands here, no pressure on the job. I think I'll just spend a few extra hours to make a beautiful graphic to match the iPod and do all the programming, you know, to take that information out of the firmware from the iPod so that it all matches up." And why is that information in the firmware in the first place? We can't be sure, but I have a feeling that Steve Jobs looked at it and asked, "Why is a black Nano showing up when a red iPod is plugged in?" You know, I read an interview of an engineer who worked on the first Macs, and he said that Steve asked him if they could change all of the wires inside the machine to match the colors of the Apple rainbow logo. He went out. He told him it would be a little too expensive to be worth the trouble. Anyway, I guess maybe Steve did see that black Nano and make them change it to red. But as silly as all this seems, it made me happy. I was talking to someone at work about this whole situation of how Steve Jobs caused this company to be the way it is, and he had an interesting observation. He said that that very attention to detail and perfection that Steve brought to the products can cause or must have caused a trickle-down effect to every employee. He explained that if the bottom guy knows that the top guy cares about the color of the device showing in the firmware, then the bottom guy will strive for perfection in everything that he designs. He knows that good enough simply isn't. I did get to talk to Steve Jobs one-on-one at All Things D quite a few years back. I approached him and started to tell him that I thought the quality of the products were slipping because I'd had so many failures in a row. And he waved his hand at me and said I was simply wrong and walked away. I wasn't really shocked. All I'd ever heard about him was that he was abrupt and rude, and he kind of lived up to that. Over the years, watching him from afar at D and at Macworld Expo, I got to see him unveil the iPod Shuffle with my buddy Ron. I seemed to sense a shift in him to the mellower, more human Steve who we seem to be remembering now. When I talked to him at D in 2010, he seemed somehow more tolerant. Not tolerant of idiots, just more polite, I guess. You know, if it weren't for Steve Jobs and the great people at Apple, I wouldn't have my day job. I have my day job because of this podcast. I wouldn't have the podcast without Apple. If I didn't have the podcast, one of my best friends would not be a wonderful man in Ireland. Without Apple, I wouldn't know any of you. I wouldn't have the live show. Rose wouldn't have founded the No Silla Castaways, who are such a big part of my life today. I wouldn't have been part of the Mac Roundtable. I wouldn't know Don and David and the other guys and my bestie, Katie. Steve wouldn't have his 5 a.m. photo walks and coffee with Victor. I wouldn't have my dear friend Tim Verporten. I wouldn't have virtually met Shane Jackson and Dr. Robert Carter and Daryl Shandro in real life to learn about accessibility and how incredibly fun it can be done. It can be if done well. Donald Burr would not have taught me to make sushi with Star Trek sound effects. We wouldn't have gone to Europe to meet Don and Barbara and Gazmaz and Nightways and Niana and done the tweet-ups where people would ply us with chocolate and beer. Now, I've gone down a dangerous path here naming people. I'm going to stop because there's so many people are an important part of Steve and my life, and I'm afraid I'm not going to be able to name everyone. But they're there because of Apple and Steve Jobs. Our lives are so full after that one day in Calvin Wong's house where a little computer made music for us. I know we'll still have Apple and the products will still make us happy, but I also know that there's a hole that will never be filled. Rod Simmons also sent in a short message about Steve that I'd like to play right now.
The first computer we owned in my house when I was a child was an Apple IIc. I was a football player, basketball, track and field, you name the sport. But I was also proud to be a member of the computer club at my local junior high school at that time. I think that's probably what cemented computers as part of my life and why I work with them today. It's hard to say what events will shape or define your future. Whether it was watching a charismatic presenter and learning how to adopt some of that style into your everyday, or whether it's that first computer that you purchased, which subsequently made you buy your second Macintosh or Apple computer in 2005, third in 2006, fourth in 2007, fifth in 2008, not to mention iPhones, iPads, iPods, and all the other devices that I've probably purchased over the years. There are so many amazing people throughout history that we get to read and learn about. You know, Abraham Lincoln, Martin Luther King, Walt Disney. But we got to live part of that right now. And while I'm very saddened from a technology perspective that he won't be around, as a father, I'm more saddened for his wife and for his kids. Steve Jobs will be greatly missed by many of us because we want that one more thing. But most importantly, and let's not forget, he'll be missed by his wife and children who want their husband or father.
Thank you, Rod. That really says it all, says some of the things that I forgot to say, and I appreciate you sending in those comments. All right, let's shake off the sadness and try to get happy again. How better than with a dumb question?
Dumb.
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 Dumb question.
Dumb questions.
What is?
How come I always have to?
It's time for Dumb Question Corner.
So Dorothy sent in a dumb question. Here's what she said. Every Mac app I've seen so far has a menu selection under the app called Services. Plus, I hear about them in Mac podcasts all the time, but no one ever explains what that means. What are services? How do they work? Examples would be helpful here. Why would I want to use them? If I did, where would I find them? And how do I add them? Okay, that's five dumb questions, but I'm completely ignorant about services and need a simple explanation. All right, Dorothy. Well, I thought about telling you that I know what services are because once Will wrote a script for me and used Automator, and then he showed me how to save it out as a service. And now when I do the podcast, I can right-click on a file, and under services, it shows the little thing that he wrote for me. But that doesn't help answer any of your questions. And I don't actually know the answers to the question. So I thought I should bring in someone who might actually give us facts and data on this subject. So what's the answer? What is a service and how does it work?
Well, since your expert is getting no introduction, I'll just talk then.
I think they'll figure out who it is.
Fair point. Well, I guess the simplest way to say it is there's small little bite-sized pieces of functionality that you can access from any app within OS X. If you're sort of from, you can look at them as just little snippets of useful things you can do with information. Then it's changed a lot in Snow Leopard. So before Snow Leopard, it was very poorly implemented in OS X. And what would happen is that you would go to the services menu and it would show you every single service that was installed in your computer, regardless of whether or not you could actually use it in the current context, and just gray them out. And so you'd have this entire screen full of menu, 90% of which was grayed out, and the odd little bit of black here or there. So as of Snow Leopard, and also in Lion, it's now aware of the context. So if you select some text and you go to the services menu, you will see all the services that you can do to text. If you have an image selected, you'll see the services you can do to an image. If you have a file selected in the Finder, you'll see the services that relate to a file and so forth. So it's now become actually useful. So OS X comes with a bunch of them pre-installed. And there's some handy things in there. So if you have any app open, you select some text, you go to the services menu, and you can do things like look up in dictionary, make a new sticky note, add a new email with the selection, or even add it to iTunes as a spoken track, which means it'll run it through Apple's speech conversion jubby.
So that appears to only work in Apple applications. Like I just selected text in Chrome, and it didn't have the services menu?
It'll work in anything that uses Apple libraries, so any Cocoa app.
Okay, so Chrome apparently doesn't. But I just noticed you suggested like an image. I went down to services, and one of the choices was post to Flickr, post to Facebook.
Exactly.
Scan with Clam XAV. So it has to do with what you have installed as well.
It has to, okay, so anything you install has the option to also drop some services into your computer. Mm-hmm. And you can also write your own. And then OS X comes with a bunch separately. And like I say, they're context aware. So what you're doing and what you have selected will determine what services show up. In the Finder, services show up if you right-click on something. You know the way that if you right-click, you get like a menu with little horizontal lines every now and then?
Mm-hmm.
Under the bottom line, so the last section of the menu are actually services. They're not labeled as such because there's not room to label them in the submenu, but they're actually services that show up. So if you right-click on any file in the Finder, you'll probably find Scan with Clam XAV, new email with attachment. They're services too.
I had never noticed this. Like, I can do app delete on it. I apparently still have the Pogo Plug software installed, even though it didn't work for me, because I can share using Pogo Plug as one of my options.
Yeah.
Set as desktop picture. That's a good one.
Yeah. That'll only show up if it's an image, of course.
Right, right.
I did a file that wasn't an image, and that didn't show up. And so the other question then was, where are they? And there's two places you'll find them on your Mac. At the system level, they're in a folder, you know, /library/services. And then inside your home account, they're in your library in a folder called services too.
Hmm. Why do they have two of them?
Well, the one in the system level shows up in everyone's account. And the one in your account is just for you.
Oh, okay.
Standard. I mean, that's the way it is for everything in OS X. You always have the system library for everyone. And then everyone has their own library for their own stuff.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
So,
except I'm not controlling what's getting installed. So it's kind of funny that it's somehow deciding certain things are...
If you haven't written your own, the chances are they're in your system library. You can double check this if you like. If you browse through your library now, you'll probably find nothing there.
I see.
Except for that one script Will wrote for you.
Actually, PogoPlug has one in there, and Poster, which is a tool I use to post images to Flickr and Facebook.
Okay, well, so they chose to put it there.
And App Delete, actually.
So if they put it there, it means they don't have to ask for the root password to install their service because they're not installing it on the system.
Right, right, right.
So that would be a reason that could show up in there.
Mm-hmm.
To me, though, there are some nice services you get for free, and there are some nice services that come with apps. But for me personally, I find that you get the real power from the services menu by writing your own.
Can I interrupt you real quick? Where did you say it was in the system level library? Because I don't.
It should be in a folder called services.
I don't have a services folder at the system level. It goes from server to speech.
Oh,
maybe it's in system library.
System library. Oh, yes.
No, as opposed to library. As opposed to my library.
Oh, actually, go and check. I just assumed it would be there.
Okay, so it's in the root level system library. There we go.
Ah, okay.
Okay, now I can pay attention.
Oh, good. Well, thanks for that correction. I just assumed it wouldn't be there and there. Yeah. What else you get for assuming? Makes an ass of you and me. Anyway, so for me personally, I find that the more powerful stuff is when you write your own. So to give some examples of how I use services, I've written a little service, and I'll explain how to write them in a moment. But I have one that when I right-click on any image, I have a service called Blogify Image.
Which makes you named it yourself too, huh?
I named it myself too, yes. Which makes it 500 pixels across and adds a drop shadow.
Oh, nice.
So I find that very handy for when I'm writing blog posts.
Blogify.
And stuff.
I like it.
Yeah, I'm not very good at naming things. And then I also have one in work, which is uber nerdy, but something I deal with a lot are MAC addresses or Ethernet IDs, depending on who you're talking to. And they come in lots of formats, which annoys the hell out of me. So Windows has decided that it's in all caps with a dash. Linux has decided that it's all lowercase with a colon. And Cisco have decided that instead of grouping it by twos, they should group it by fours. Instead of using a dash or a colon, they should use a dot. So you get a MAC address email to you. But we need it in the Linux format to be able to do anything with it. So I have a little service I have called Fix MAC Address, which takes whatever's in the clipboard, looks for MAC addresses. If it finds any, it puts them in the Linux format and then writes it all back to the clipboard. So if someone sends me an email, I select it, and then I actually use the keyboard options to map this service to a keyboard command of Control M for MAC address. So I select Control C to copy, Control M to fix, go to my app, Control V to paste.
Okay. But so, you have to be able to write these to get to have those.
Write is an interesting word. So if you want to do something insane like my MAC address one, yes, write is the word you use. But for simple things, you actually don't have to write anything. You can use Automator to build a workflow by just dragging and dropping in little components or bricks that will add up to what you want to do. So if you open up Automator and you go File New, you'll get presented with a window with all the different things Automator can build for you. And one of the things Automator can build is a service. And if you ask it to build you a service, it will create a workflow with an extra little bar on top that defines how it should interact with the services menu. And so you can specify what app you want this to show up in, all apps, just the finder, whatever. You can specify what it expects as input. So do I expect text? Do I expect nothing? Do I expect a file? Do I expect an image file? Do I expect a PDF? Whatever. So that gives it the context then. And then you just drag and drop in your bits and pieces, and then it will magically show up in the appropriate context in all of your apps or wherever you've told it to show up.
The only caveat I would give to that is, in my experience working with you crazy people and Automator Script, is that in the end it's always, and I just have to put a little Apple script in there to finish it off, which is where I get paralyzed.
On what you're trying to do, to be honest, because if you're writing a service, you're probably not writing a giant big workflow. You're probably trying to do something simple that you do over and over and over again. And, you know, it's five clicks or whatever, but it's five clips you do 100 times a day. So in some sense, it's very much the text expander principle.
Yeah, you know, but like,
to save you an hour, it just saves you 30 seconds. But if you do it often enough, it's important.
Maybe I should try to do some smaller things. But I know working with Will on my script to grab my audio file as an AIFF, run it through Levelator, and then import it into iTunes, add the tags, convert it to MP3, add the tags, and then show me where the file is. There's like three Apple scripts in there. Even though every single step I just described is pretty simple, right? But like, it has to know how long to wait for Levelator to finish. That was a big thing, because when my files got too big, all of a sudden the script would fail. And so little steps had to be put in. So I've never been able to make one because they were always too hard.
Do you
want
to walk through a simple one?
Sure.
So fire up Automator.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll ask you what you want to do. And you say, I'd like a service, please.
Okay.
So then you see you get a blank Automator window then with what you have available down the left-hand side. And then across the top, you have a little bar that tells it how to interact with the service. So service receives selected, and you're going to change that to image files.
Okay.
In. And then you're going to say finder.
Okay.
And then you're going to, in the little search box, search for image.
Okay.
And that should show you all the image-related thingamabobs, actions.
Okay.
Actually, search for resize.
Ah. Are we going to do half of your thing? Okay.
We're going to do half of my thing.
Let's see, resize didn't find anything. Scale, probably.
Scale.
This
is when you do things live.
Yeah, scale's there.
You can crop images. Okay, so you pick up scale images and you drop it in.
Okay.
Now it does something nice. So it says, you're about to alter a file. Do you want to insert an action to duplicate it first? Or do you want to, fly without a safety net?
Oh, that's a good idea. Okay.
So let's say add. So now you'll see that an extra action called copy finder items has appeared.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to take the original and put it somewhere safe so that you don't break it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you say scale image to 480 pixels.
Okay.
You don't even have to hit save on Lion, but if you're not on Lion, you hit save.
All right.
Then you go to your finder, you click on any image you like, and then your action should have appeared. You may have to save it once to give it a name. Otherwise, it's not going to have a name, is it?
Right.
So save the service as test service, I'm going to call it, so I can delete it later.
Okay.
So now if you go to the finder and just find any image anywhere in your hard drive, it should show up, test service, and you should right-click, and it should do its thing.
It did.
See?
Look at that. And it put something somewhere.
It put it on your desktop.
My desktop. Did it put the duplicate on the desktop or the original?
I don't know offhand, but it's very quick to find out.
Okay. Desktop here. This is live radio. This is exciting here. The new one is on the desktop. And you can change that within the service.
You can within the service.
Wow. That was pretty easy. So I could put a desktop share. That was me deleting it, that noise, by the way. Wiretap Studio is nicely set up right now to record every single sound. So anything I do, you're going to hear it.
What you will also find is that just like services are published by applications you install, so are Automator actions. So because I have Pixelmator installed, I actually have much more image actions than you would just have by default. So I have an action here called Watermark Images.
Yeah, I've got all kinds of stuff from Acorn in here.
Yeah, Acorn will present stuff, Aperture presents stuff, Pixelmator presents stuff. So lots of apps present little actions out. Transmit presents loads of stuff out if you want to move files over and back to servers and stuff.
Oh, wow, look at that.
So
it's moved up a bit since the last time I looked at it. I'm sure I'm going to end up needing something more. But
you see, there's two actions that sort of are your get out of jail free cards if you know how to program. They're add
drop shadow's not an option here.
Apple, it's not an option by default, but you can get a quartz filter to do that, and there is an action called apply quartz filter.
So we probably should stop playing and answer that question. Where would I find them? How do I add them?
Well, if you search for actions. For Automator actions, then you will find Automator actions. But in general, what you have is what you have. So your sort of get out of jail free card for if you can't do something is the action called run Apple script. Because then you can find an Apple script anywhere on the web that does what you need to do and just paste it into the run Apple script action. And the one I use all the time is run shell script, which is where I get to run all my fancy Perl code.
Okay.
So there's who you get out of jail free ones. But in general, you can do an awful lot without ever doing that sort of scary stuff. Because as you can see, since Automator was introduced about 5 years ago, it's been slowly, without much fanfare, picking up more and more and more and more actions and more features.
Cool. I'm glad to take another look at this. I just did a search for drop shadow Automator script. Boom, 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 boom. There's a whole bunch of them.
So another handy little action that I wrote that's very easy to do, that takes a folder as an input, takes a folder, duplicates it, and converts every file inside it from a TIFF to a JPEG.
Oh, that's kind of neat.
And that was entirely using the free stuff that's there without any messing. So, there's a lot you can do with it. Just think of automating little repetitive tasks. And then look for the pieces and build the jigsaw.
Cool. Well, that's a much better answer than anything I was going to give Dorothy. I did have a vague idea, but I certainly couldn't give it the depth that you gave it. This is excellent. And description of all this, of course, will be in the show notes.
Yes, I did some typing earlier, so hopefully it does justice to what we just said.
Well, thanks, Bart, for helping us with that dumb question. It's nice to have you on when you're not on Chit Chat Across the Pond.
Well, thank you very much. It's always nice to get to Chit Chat.
Well, that was pretty fun having Bart there to do the heavy lifting for me. Always a good thing. Well, I have some great news. The state of California and Amazon have made nice, and so the affiliate program is back for the No Silicast podcast. Now, why do you actually care about that? Obviously, it's important to me, but why do you care? Because it's the easiest way to support the show. The next time you're going to buy something at Amazon, and let's face it, you're going to buy something at Amazon, just click the Amazon logo on podfeet.com in the left sidebar, and then buy whatever you were going to buy anyway. Anything you search for, you don't have to buy the thing that's in the ad or any kind of link that I tell you to go to. Just buy anything in Amazon by going through podfeet.com, and a small percentage of most sales go back to support the podcast. Buying one of the new Kindles? Click the link. Buying books to go on your iPad in the Kindle store? Click the link. It's October already, so that means holiday shopping is coming up. Use the Amazon link on podfeet.com. I really appreciate the support. It does help me pay the bills for all the tools I need to run for the show, like I said, and it doesn't cost you a dime. Heck, why don't you bookmark podfeet.com, but call the bookmark Amazon in your menu bar? Yeah, that's the ticket.
I don't have the eye or gear to approach Bart's photographic excellence, but at times, I'm the best at hand, and Roger's funeral a couple of weeks ago was one. As 140 of Roger's friends and family gathered to share memories and a meal, I photographed them all. I captured flags lowering in his honor and the gleam of chrome from the Patriot Guard's motorcycle escort lined up to take Roger home. But when I inserted the camera card in my new Air, the computer thought it was blank. Fortunately, I'd recently heard Leo recommend a Windows-only card rescue program and turned to Google for a Mac equivalent. Card Rescue opened the card my Mac wouldn't. It found the pictures I needed, together with hundreds more I thought were long ago formatted away. 636 in all. Time to buy, because while the preview reports what can be rescued, a paid license is necessary to do it. I bought mine instantly from the developer site. Card Rescue is also sold on Apple's Mac App Store for the same $39.99. Its free trial is only on the developer site. Like all programs, Card Rescue has some idiosyncrasies. I put a list of the many file types it recovers in Allison's show notes, but the preview mode only thumbnails JPEGs. Card Rescue works fine on trouble-free cards. That means you can try it out and learn how it works before you're bitten by Murphy. Don't wait until you're holding Mipples above shark-infested Australian waters. You'll want those last pictures of your Mac Mania cruise. I'd cue the theme from Jaws here, but don't want to throw blood in the water. If there's one shark more terrifying than the great white, it's the copyright lawyer in full frenzy. As always, links and more in the show notes.
Well, George, thanks for the recommendation. You know, I've had this problem before, and there's so many like fake cheater products out there that I've kind of hesitated to pick one to try. I'm going to keep Card Rescue in my back pocket for the next time. And I'm so glad you were able to get your friend's photos back from such an important event. If you've been in the live show in the last month or two, you'll know that I've been through some, what do we call them, challenges with piping with my audio from my mic and GarageBand into the live feed for people who are watching the show. I do have a really complicated setup of applications and devices, but the main problem was that we had some funkiness thrown into the loop when I moved over to Lion. I've been struggling to get the audio from my mic at the same level as the audio from GarageBand and into the live video and the separate audio-only feed on Icecast. Well, this week, my hero, Stu Helm from the International Mac Podcast at iampodcast.tv, solved the problem with the easiest, simplest solution. I'm not going to go into all the gory details, but it involves using a $25 Griffin iMic. Seriously. And of course, I already had a Griffin iMic. Anyway, as I learned from Stu, I realized that I'd better make a Screen Steps tutorial for myself to make sure I could reproduce what he taught me. I took a photograph with my iPhone of the iMic hooked up to my Mac, I emailed it to myself, and I simply dragged that image into the Screen Steps tutorial. I annotated the image with sequence numbers so the instructions could note what each interface was supposed to do. I then took screenshots of each software step and annotated those. I threw some tags on the lesson, and now I've got it saved for when I'm stuck in the future. I even adapted Stu's advice for the live show to allow me to record chit-chat across the pond with two separate audio sources into Wiretap Studio, even though Wiretap Studio won't work with Lion to do that. Using the iMic, it's all possible. I made a duplicate of my previous lesson, modified the appropriate steps, and now I've got two lessons recorded, all in a matter of like 10 to 15 minutes. The best part, though, was when I realized that I'd neglected to answer an email from Leon Walsh from over a week ago, and he needed exactly what I'd learned about using the iMic with Wiretap Studio. I simply clicked the share button in ScreenSteps, selected HTML to clipboard, and plopped that right into an email response to Leon. I could not have worked out on this any easier, couldn't possibly have worked out better than this. I guarantee that if you spend the measly $40 to buy ScreenSteps Desktop from ScreenSteps.com, you'll find you'll be creating lessons for yourself, your friends, your family, your coworkers, and you're going to look brilliant. But when you go to buy it, be sure to tell them Allison sent you, okay? Next up, I'd like to play a recording from Robert Carter of the Tech Doctor podcast. He's going to talk to us about Amazon Kindles and accessibility.
Hello, Allison and all the Nocilla castaways. This is Robert Carter of the Tech Doctor podcast. I am a blind user of Apple products, and needless to say, I'm absolutely thrilled with the accessibility that Apple has provided to its entire product line for those of us who are blind. But today, I want to talk with you about something that I'm very upset by, frustrated about, and really would like to ask all of the Nocilla castaways to help with this situation. Amazon has recently released four new models of the Kindle. Three of the four models, including the new Kindle Fire tablet, are completely inaccessible to a blind person. They've built no accessibility whatsoever into these products. The only one of the Kindle products that is sort of accessible is the keyboard version of the Kindle, which has the same sort of accessibility as the Kindle 3. Amazon, a couple of years ago, took a little bit of effort to make the Kindle 3 somewhat accessible. They made it possible so that a blind person could use text-to-speech to have a book read aloud. That is, if the publisher allowed that book to have that feature enabled. Some publishers do not allow their books to work with the read aloud feature because they are afraid of competing apparently with their audiobook business. This is a ridiculous fear because synthetic speech is nothing like a human reader. They're not equivalent at all. Also, the Kindle bookstore is not accessible on the Kindle 3 or the Kindle keyboard that was recently released. And many of the other options and items on the Kindle are not accessible to a blind person. In addition, there's no way to review the text that you're reading with the Kindle. There's no way to spell out words if you need to see how something is spelled, for example. There's no way to do highlighting and bookmarking and things like that. It's a token effort toward accessibility at best. Amazon has a great reputation for providing good customer service, and I order from them just like everyone else does and have enjoyed that. But when it comes to caring about blind customers and demonstrating their caring for us, they have failed miserably to make their Kindle products accessible. And I don't think Amazon should do this because it's the right thing to do, even though I think it is the right thing to do. I think Amazon should realize they are missing out on sales because there are a large number of blind people throughout the world who want to read and access information just like everyone else does. And our money is just as good as anyone else's money. And Amazon is missing an opportunity, not allowing us to buy a product from them that is usable and accessible by a blind person. So please, Nocilla castaways, contact your Amazon representative, contact customer service, and let them know of your dissatisfaction with this situation. Thank you very much, and so long from the Tech Doctor.
Well, thanks for telling us about that, Robert. I was glad to hear you say that you do use Amazon, so I don't feel bad about using them myself, but it seems like we ought to try to do something about this. It's time to give the Nocilla Castaways a job to do here. I went online, and I looked for a place to gently suggest a change in their stupid ways. Uneducated ways. And I found a specific link where you can give feedback to the Kindle team. I put that link in the show notes so everyone can use this link to complain. In my note that I wrote to them, I pointed out that there are 135 million blind visually impaired people in the world. I even gave my source, uniteforsight.org, and, you know, simply ignoring such a vast number of people is simply dumb for business. It's no longer about, is it good, you know, are you being a good citizen? It's not that. It's just stupid not to. It just doesn't make any sense. That's why I get so mad when I see CAPTCHAs. It's like, you know, CAPTCHAs that don't have an audio component. It's like, really? You just want to leave out 135 million people? It doesn't make any sense. Anyway, I hope we can all collectively make a difference. I'd love to see you hit that link, make a phone call, whatever you like to do, and try to get them to stop being so silly. So do you ever get tingly feelings in your wrists from typing too much? Maybe you're a really fast typist and you feel the pain of too much typing as a result, but you just love to be efficient. It's like an obsession with you to go really, really fast. Or maybe you type really, really slowly, two fingers at a time, and you're irritated that you're not keeping up with everyone else. What if you could have a tool that would let you type fewer characters? You could go faster if you're a slow typist, and you could be amazingly efficient if you're a fast typist. Either way, typing fewer characters has to be good for your wrists, right? Enter Text Expander from Smile. With Text Expander, all you do is tell it whatever phrase you type often, and tell it an abbreviation for it. You get to make up your own abbreviation. You can put anything you want in there. And now you never have to type those phrases again. They can be really long paragraphs, or they can be just annoying to type words, like the ones with, you know, the ones with a capital letter in the middle for no apparent reason. You can never remember which one has a capital letter. It'll just take care of that for you. Now, you owe it to yourself to get Text Expander from Smile to save yourself time and to reduce the pain in your wrists. Check it out at smilesoftware.com. And be sure to tell them you heard about it on the Nocilla Cast. Well, it's that time of the week again. My favorite time of the week. It is time for Chit Chat Across the Pond. And this week we have Chris Ashley from the Simple Mobile Review podcast, also a great athlete in his own right. How are you doing today, Chris?
I'm doing fantastic. I don't know about great athlete, but, you know, we'll go with that one.
I was just teasing Chris before the show. I understand he has a vast dislike for exercise, so I promised I'd work that into the show. Well, I wanted to get Chris on the show just to kind of be ornery here. As I've mentioned many, many times, I purposely named my show in this weird, vague way so no one could ever claim that I was off topic. So if you think this is a purely Mac podcast, it definitely is not. Chris Ashley on the Simple Mobile Review podcast is the one who represents the Windows Phone community. Is that right?
That's correct. Otherwise known as the Windows Phone bigot. But, you know, those are harsh terms that my friends use. But, you know, if anybody else wants to use it, I'm okay with it.
I got to tell you, in behind your back, that is exactly how I refer to each of you. As I said, okay, wait, they got an Android bigot, an iPhone or an OS, or I'll get it yet, a Windows Phone 7 bigot and a RIM bigot. You guys don't have a Mac bigot. You got Rod, who kind of slides around there, right?
Yeah, Rod is the closest that we have to a Mac bigot. I mean, he really does love Apple stuff. I mean, he's got Apple computers all through his house. He's had every iPhone that's ever been released, every iPod. He bought iPads for his father and his sister. So the guy's definitely in the ecosystem.
He just pretends not to be the Apple bigot, but in reality. Okay, good.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's undercover. But
there was a couple reasons I wanted to get you on the show was that I actually don't know anything about Windows Phone 7. I listened to Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, and I've gotten kind of a flavor. But I don't know how it feels, how it works, what's different, what's cool, what's stupid, you know. I really don't get it. And I thought this week would be a good week to do it because Windows Phone 7 Mango came out.
even if you don't know the name, even if you do know the name, but it sounds like you don't know the name, I like the jab at our stuff anyway.
So, well, come on. a phone running Windows Phone 7 is a Windows Phone 7 phone, right?
All right. So let me clear this up. It's the current operating system for Microsoft for phone devices is Windows Phone. This version happens to be Windows Phone 7. And what released was Windows Phone 7.5, codenamed Mango.
But if you put it on a phone, isn't that phone referred to as a Windows Phone 7 phone?
Windows Phone 7 phone. Sure. No, it'd be Windows Phone. It's a Windows Phone running Windows Phone with version 7.
Oh, that's a lot better, Chris. Yeah.
All right, the name is terrible. Okay.
Okay, so your Mango phone. So, okay, so let's start back at the beginning here. If we're looking at a Windows phone, what is it about? Describe what the interface is like. I've seen photos, but I haven't actually played with it. What's the basic idea of how it works? It's not just a bunch of icons on the screen like Android or iOS.
No, and this is the thing about Windows Phone that sets it above the rest, in my opinion. Yeah, see, you did get a Windows Phone bigot down here. But the whole concept is to use tiles instead of icons. If you look at iOS, you have a bunch of icons on your screen. You look at Android, you have a bunch of icons on your screen. Windows decided, or Microsoft decided, to move things up a level and really just give you tiles for people who are saying, okay, what are tiles? Just think of them as widgets on an Android device. Where
so they're not just big square icons? They're
no,
actually something different.
Correct. So in one sense, they can be a big square icon because a tile could certainly launch you into an application. But on the other hand, there's so much more than that because those tiles actually provide you information. So, for example, I could have an application that does RSS reading. And as new content comes into that RSS reader, it's displayed onto the tile. So it shows me like the title of the new article that has came in, and it can actually rotate and actually show me the screen or the picture that was used to denote or go with that particular RSS feed. So it's really cool, and it's really live. So you see that tile moving around all the time. The most popular tile is the people tile, and that launches you into the people hub. Now, this is kind of...
Wait. Don't get off into hubs yet.
Okay.
Because I don't know what a hub is, so I want to get back to the tiles. If the tile is changing what's on it, though, isn't it hard to find the right tile if you can't see it visually? It doesn't always look the same?
Well, no, because the base of the tile, you know, it's still usually in the same location unless you move it around. And it also has the name of the application that the tile is leading you to, or the area that it's leading you to. It's just the kind of like in the background, there's an image or additional text that's being updated for you. So even like your weather on iOS, you have to, if you want to know what the weather is, you know, generally you had to launch an application for it. You
sure.
Know, I know they're starting to bubble things up more because they're really starting to copy what Microsoft is doing. You have to bubble stuff up to the interface. And before, you have to go into an application to figure out if you want to know when your next meeting is. Generally, you have to launch an application to figure out my next meeting. Windows Phone, all of that is displayed for you right on the start screen. So
if you look at your calendar, for example, you're saying you would be able to see like what your next meeting was would be in there?
Absolutely. Not only my next meeting, but even some basic information about the meeting. Is it on site? Is it on the phone? You know, what the number is for that particular meeting. All of that's displayed.
Wow. I know when I'm trying to find a meeting on my BlackBerry, it's like, you know, 8 minutes after I turn it on that I'm actually be able to find the meeting, right?
Well, the first 5 minutes of that is it booting up, right?
Well, I don't reboot my phone very often, so hopefully not. I was concerned about the confusion factor, though, and maybe I'm jumping ahead of myself in the notes here, but I've been playing with Windows 8, and Windows 8 uses tiles, and they do update like that. But like, there's one of the tiles in this is in the developer preview, so this is like pre-alpha. But one of them was for some social app, and it feeds in your Facebook stuff. Well, every time I look at that tile, it's got somebody else's face on it, and I can't tell what it is. It's like, wait a minute, why is that picture of Bob on there? Oh, that's social sites or social whatever it was called.
Right, and generally what's happening is that person may have posted a new picture or has updated their profile picture. So
but it took over the whole tile in that case. But you're saying on Windows Phone 7, it doesn't take over the whole tile.
No, it doesn't take over the whole tile. Okay. Windows Phone 7 has actually, like, you imagine a square tile, and then there's squares within that tile. So you, at any one time, I may see 10 to 15 different people, their images on that tile.
Okay. Okay.
Now, one of the nice things is when you take an application, you put it on your start screen, that's called pinning. So you pin the tile to your start screen. And I have some of my favorite people, for example, my wife, is pinned to my start screen. And so when she updates her picture, it does show initially who the tile is, what the tile is for. So it's my wife. And then it flips over. And then I can see maybe some post or some text from a post that she posted. Then it'll flip again. And I can see maybe she updated her picture. And then it'll flip again and go back to saying that, you know, this is my wife's tile. So okay. It does rotate to the point where you know what the tile is, but you also see the cool content coming in. And this is the concept Microsoft is doing. It's information at a glance.
I like that. I like that. Now, why is everything turquoise or blue?
Well,
or turquoise or green? I mean, is that it? Can you mess with that?
Those are the default colors. There's a mango color that was just released. There's my wife uses a magenta, I believe it is, or more of a pink on her screen. I actually use the mango because I'm such a shill. But there's about 7 different colors. Most people want additional colors. I'm sure Microsoft is working on adding more colors. There's about 7 to 8 different colors that you can use.
Wow. 7 to 8? Oh, sorry.
Yeah, exactly. All right.
Well, yeah. You could make your screen pretty pukey if everything was a different color, right?
Right. And, you know, it's probably what you guys mostly experience anyway with, you know, when you're sitting in icon L, I should say.
Yeah. I haven't found a good way to manage that at all. If I put them in folders, then I don't recognize anything because my brain's just looking at this little glop of stuff, and I don't read the name, so I can't find it. So I just use search on everything anyway.
Right. Okay. And which is fair. A lot of people search becomes your best friend on an Android phone because stuff gets lost because of the icons. The beautiful thing of
Go ahead.
A beautiful thing about the way Microsoft has implemented Windows Phone is the fact that a lot of information can be gelled together. So you have contacts, and then you have Facebook contacts, and then you have Twitter contacts. Same thing with Android. On Windows Phone, you just have people, and how you interact with those different people are all bubbled up into the same section. So when I open up, when I go to look for somebody to call, I can also see their Facebook information, their Twitter information, their Windows Live information. All of that information is all on the same person, as opposed to being managed as different contacts for different people. So bubbling everything together to make it easier to locate information.
Now, that's a different way of looking at the stuff on your phone. I don't think about the stuff on my phone being people. I think about games, productivity applications, social right. applications. I think of it in a completely different way.
Right. And they're all siloed into different things.
Well, they're Microsoft. Siloed differently. Instead of siloed by people, they're siloed by what kind of stuff. But people sure. might make more sense.
Yep. And so not everything but gets, you know, lunched together. But, for example, if I go in and I pick up my phone and I watch a YouTube video on my phone. And then I go later on and say, you know what, let me see what other videos or movies I have on my phone. In my history, I will actually see the YouTube video. It doesn't say that it came from YouTube. I just see that I can relaunch that video right from my
cool.
history. So
that's
you understand
really
how
cool.
pulling it all together, even though it's not all the same stuff. So it doesn't matter if it was on my phone. What do I care, or the user cares, that I watched a video on YouTube? All it cares is it was a video that I watched, and it was in my history. So
it is kind of funny that we now refer to videos as YouTube videos.
Right.
I mean, you don't say Vimeo videos. When you're on Vimeo, you just call it a video. But if it came from YouTube, you call it a YouTube video. Even if you didn't see it on YouTube, you often call it a YouTube video, right?
Right, right. Now YouTube has become its own entity, right?
Right.
But it doesn't matter. You know, if it's on my phone, if it's on my computer, if it's on Dropbox, if it's on YouTube, it all shows up in my history. That's something I can replay.
That's very cool.
Pulling it all together.
Now, talk about the number of apps that are out there.
So right now, there's just over 30,000 applications. So,
wow.
And Microsoft touts the fact that about 90% of major applications that exist on other platforms do exist on Windows Phone as well. So application will always be an area for folks to to poo-poo Windows Phone. you only have 30. Well, yeah, it's not even a year old yet. So,
you know what, though? Just dial the clock back to the early 2000s, late 90s, where people would say, well, other good applications are, or all the applications are on Windows. And as Mac users, we go, yeah, but like the good ones are on the Mac, you know, really there. We were smoking something. But when you get up to 30,000, I'm thinking you probably got enough fart apps and stuff there, right?
Oh, yeah. And Microsoft's done a good job so far trying to keep out the redundancy and keep out the nonsense. Like, they limit the amount of apps a person, because you know you have people flooding the app stores with 35 different RSS apps that point to, you know, their favorite Justin Bieber video or whatever. So Microsoft, you know, limits the amount of apps a person can submit at a time to kind of stop people from doing those type of things. So they're trying to regulate, you know, keeping fart apps to a minimum.
Well, that brings up a good point. So are the apps curated the way they are by Apple, or are they run free, full of porn? I'm sorry, full of stuff you want in Android.
So Microsoft is trying to put themselves, even with the whole entire platform, somewhere in between where Android is and where an iPhone is. So iPhone being the most restrictive of what they can do from an app standpoint and how they submit it and how it gets out there. Android being the wild, wild west. Microsoft does curate the applications that go in there, so they want to make sure people aren't stealing IP and shoving bad stuff out there. But, I'm sure they're probably not scrutinizing it to the level of what Apple may be doing. But, you know, Apple has slipped up too.
Sure. Yeah. I wonder who they put in charge now of, you know, reviewing every app. You always got the sense that Steve Jobs was saying, nope, not that one.
You did get that sense. It's like, yes, no, yes, no.
May not be true, but you sort of felt that way. So
right.
you find that it, for the most part, when you need an app, you can find something that'll do what you want to do?
For the most part, I have, you know, I look at the phone as, okay, what type of things do I want to do from my standpoint to make my life easy?
Mm-hmm.
So which apps are involved and what type of things are built into the phone to handle those. So I have my banking applications. I have my satellite radio application, although I'll touch on that in a second. I have Netflix. So all the major things that I've always done from a mobile device exist for me. Now, that may not hold true for everybody else, but at least for me, and I'm into mobile devices just as much as anybody else, I can get around with my phone just fine.
The things you need and want. Okay.
Right. There's games, there's productivity, there's entertainment. All exist on the platform.
Now, I'm completely off script here now. Now you made me think of another question. When you talk about productivity, how's the keyboard, the virtual keyboard that comes up when you go? I assume there's a virtual keyboard?
Oh, absolutely, virtual keyboard. There are devices that have a physical keyboard. So, and that's another thing Microsoft did, is allow multiple type of chassis for Windows Phone, so to suit everybody.
Okay.
Now, I'm going to say this, and I'm sure some of your listeners may just hate me at this point, but the virtual keyboard on Windows Phone is the best virtual keyboard I've ever used.
Cool. What's good about it?
It is very, very accurate, very fast, and very fluid. So, I was talking to Brandon Watson about it, and I was doing some reading, and actually, the keyboard kind of senses what you're trying to type next. And so what happens is some of the letters, if I read this correctly, will actually get bigger or smaller so that you can hit them easier. You know, I mean, it's very subtle from what I understand,
sure.
but the idea is it anticipates what your next word is. So not only just the word you're typing, but what the next word is. Now, I'd like to see them implement that a little bit better where it's already on the screen before I hit the next letter. Of course, memorizing phrases, very similar to what SwiftKey does on Android. But, nonetheless, the keyboard is awesome to use. I mean, you can really, especially for folks that, you know, I watch my son, who is ridiculous with text messaging, and I just see clack, 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 you know, get down on it. So he does a very good job. So anybody that uses it would have to like it.
On iOS, they do a thing where it's not exactly predicting what you're going to do next, but if you type two letters that aren't normally next to each other, like there's no word that's going to actually be spelled that way, it looks at the letters around what you did type and says, she didn't mean a T, she meant an R. and just right. And just changes it. But the learning curve to adapt to that, you know, Steve Jobs got up there and said, just trust it, you know, and I'm like, yeah, what are you talking about? And so a year into using it, everybody else says it took them a month. It took me a year. I started to trust it, and it's amazing when you trust it. But if you don't trust it, you sit there going, no, I didn't mean that. But right. You watch me type, and just gibberish is coming out of my fingers, and iOS is just going, oh, I know what you meant.
I know, yeah.
Now, it still isn't perfect by any means, but it's a lot better than what I'm typing.
Yeah, Windows Phone has the same functionality as well. So I've typed entire sentences without looking at the screen. I'm just kind of going through the keyboard, and I look up, and I'll see a word that, I mean, it's like it may be completely off, not even a real word, but if I tap it, one of the suggestions is the word that I wanted because I just hit the next letter for each letter in the word I was trying to type. So it certainly has that same functionality, but it's just extremely smooth. And I've typed on an iPhone, and while it was definitely the bar that was set as far as virtual keyboards are concerned, I truly believe that the Windows Phone keyboard is much better.
Cool. Well, I've been letting you tell me a lot of things that you really like about it. What do you not like so much?
So, and this is an honest answer, there's not much about the operating system that I don't like. I really love the phone. However, I still have some, you know, I have some personal applications that I would like to see bring back. For example, I mentioned satellite radio earlier. I would like to see Microsoft go harder at some of these big companies to bring their applications to our platform. I know they have a team in place, and I know this team contacts these different companies and tries to get them on their platform and helps them develop the applications. But I, you know, DirecTV's NFL ticket application. I'm a huge football guy, and you know, probably why I don't like exercising so much. But I love
because you like to sit on the couch and watch football.
I played football as a young guy, and I got into powerlifting later on. So you know, now I just rather watch it on TV. So but not being able to use the NFL ticket application when they started doing stuff on Windows Mobile before they went to any of the other platforms.
Oh man,
to me. Are missing things. For definitely more colors, because that's something that people complain about, is the amount of colors that you can do on the screen. Now, talking about satellite radio, there's two guys that made an application for Windows Phone that supports satellite radio. However, SiriusXM themselves do not support these developers very well. Hmm. So while they have the feeds where people can write code and get the feeds, they're not getting all the feeds. And the one show that I listen to 99% of the time while I'm using the satellite radio doesn't show up on the phone. And so, you know, it's almost like, all right, I can listen to ESPN, I can listen to the comp, but those aren't channels that I listen to on a regular basis. So, is
that actually Microsoft's fault, or is that somewhere between the developers and Sirius?
The functionality off the application is certainly, in this case, it's definitely on Sirius's side. However, is SiriusXM getting the pressure from Microsoft to do these things, to update these things, or build their own app? You know what I mean? So I just need to see.
Maybe the user community needs to push in there then.
And you're probably right, too. They can definitely help out there. Another thing is Microsoft has fantastically integrated Twitter into the OS. It's the same way iOS 5 is going to do. However, direct messages aren't part of that deep integration that you see. So
are you kidding?
I don't know why they left that off.
Maybe so you get at messages in your regular stream and lists, but you don't get direct messages?
You got it.
So it does do lists, though?
Lists. You know what? I don't use lists that much.
I live on lists.
Well, you're a superstar, so.
Yeah, well, you know. No, it's just I follow too many people. So, like, my regular stream is the last thing I read. I read direct messages first, then at messages, then I read my some of my lists, and then if I've got nothing else to do, then I go dip my head in the stream.
Yeah, see, what you can do, though, is you can create groups in your people hub. So,
talk about hubs. What's a hub?
So, a hub is the easiest way to describe a hub is more of a category. So, for example, the people I talked about, how all of their Facebook and Twitter, That's called a people hub. The people tile leads you into the people hub, where anything that I do with people, as far as communication-wise, are kind of bubbled up into there. So if I click on a contact, I can even see the history of my conversation with this contact. I can see I called them yesterday. I called them the day before. I had a text message the day before that. I emailed with them the day before that.
That's actually really good, because I find myself sitting there going, well, wait a minute. Was that a text message, or was that a tweet, or was that an email? Exactly. Oh, heck, it was a voicemail. There's no way I can keep track.
Exactly. And all of that stuff is bubbled in there. So when I go into the people hub, I can see, you know, the last 8 people that I've contacted with, no matter if it was email or a phone call. If I scroll through and I see all if you want to call them contacts, listed in there. But it's basically a mesh of Facebook contacts, Twitter contact, and my regular phone contact and my email contact. So all of that exists in one location. There's a music and video hub. So anything to do with music and videos, all kind of in the same section. And once you get into that section, you can look specifically at music or specifically at video. There's a games hub where, you know, all the Xbox Live games exist. So it's really more categorizing things in an intelligent way. But it's not just creating a folder on the desktop and then you have all these icons inside of a folder. It's more interaction than that. It's deeper than that. It's having things be able to talk to each other and work with each other with inside the same category. That's the best way for me to explain the hub.
That's really, really different. I think one of the things I like about Windows Phone 7, and I've said this also about Windows 8, and I do want to get to the connection of those two eventually, but is that at least they're doing something different. It may or may not be good. It sounds like it is pretty good, but it's different, you know, and that pushes the industry forward, right?
Exactly. You know,
just copying each other constantly, you know, maybe copy some. I think everybody should be allowed to copy like 20%, and they got to invent the other 80.
Right. And you know what? That's a great idea and a great thing, because if somebody comes out with a good idea, why not? You know, it just makes sense. However, you don't just take that great idea, take it and make it better than it was when you first got it.
Sure.
And then that's how everybody wins and things move forward. It's just the whole thing with Windows Phone 7 is you just think differently. And that's kind of, it's a good thing. And you're right, it can be bad, because people are coming from other platforms, don't necessarily understand. I've had, you know what I like to do for fun? I go into an AT&T store and I just argue with all the reps. That's how much of a shill I am.
I used to do that at CompUSA. I'd stand around and I'd listen to some poor guy go up and say, I need a computer to do email. And then the rep would say, well, okay, we've got a quad core, blah, 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 you know, and then you need 8,000 gigabytes of RAM and all this stuff. And I'd wait until the rep walked away, and then I'd go up and get the guy and I'd take him down to the low-end machine and show him what he really needs.
Right, exactly. You know, I will go into the AT&T store, I stand there, and I just watch, you know, all the reps, and they tout the iPhone.
Figure out who the most wrong guy is, and then go yell
right.
at him.
Well, and see, I was like, why aren't you guys pushing Windows Phone? Well, nobody's asking for it. I was like, it's not for them to ask for it. It's for you to push it. You know, well, this, you know, and this is like early on when Windows Phone first came out. The guy was like, oh, well, you know, I've always heard that once you start running a lot of applications, it starts to slow down. I said, no, that's completely wrong. Well, that's what I heard. Well, I don't know how you heard that, because it doesn't have multitasking. So that's completely wrong. And he just looked at me like, oh boy, he caught me. You know, and that's the thing. And I enjoy that. I enjoy that gotcha moment more than anybody else, probably. But, you know, I made my mom late for her bus ride home because I was arguing with some folks in the Apple store, in the AT&T store. But it's just
for the sport of it.
Right. And it just, and that's the other thing I'd like to see Microsoft do, is really get into these carriers and tout their operating system, tout their phone platform. It's not, to me, it's just, it's not enough, you know, and if they want to succeed and they want this thing to blow up as they do, they really got to get a hold of these characters. These are the first salespeople for the device.
Well, so you know, maybe they're counting on their the Microsoft stores to do that. I mean, I know that's they better not be, you're saying?
Exactly. They better not be, because there's not enough of them. They're not out there like that, you know, so they better not be. You know, they better be out there beating down the doors, because they got a fantastic operating system. You know, the other thing is, I'd like to see some more fighting power from Microsoft when it comes to devices, you know, because one thing Apple has over everybody else is they have a unique looking device that people are now trying to copy.
Well, they used to have a unique looking device. Samsung.
Yeah, Samsung. Oh my gosh, they just took the iPhone and put it on a scanner and made their own device. So,
exactly.
But yeah, I need Microsoft to go beat up these device manufacturers to create their own devices. You know, and I guess they'll get some of that with Nokia. Thank goodness. Nokia is fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I'm glad you brought up Nokia, because I was gonna ask you what you think about. They're about to come out with the first Windows. Well, I'm gonna say it right. Windows phone, right? I tried. I really did.
Well, I would say Nokia is about to come out with their first iteration of a Windows Phone 7 device.
There we go.
We all can't wait. I mean, we keep seeing leaked screenshots and leaked photos, and I've talked to folks that friends that I have at Microsoft, and they all say that their devices look fantastic, at an expected caliber device that you would expect to see from Nokia. And anybody listening doesn't know, Nokia makes great devices. And so
I think almost everybody started on a Nokia device, and everybody, from the early generation eras. I mean, I go back to the, rocking my StarTAC and all, but just about everybody I know started on a Nokia and had no reason to leave them except that they didn't do anything new and interesting for so long.
Right. I mean, my first Nokia was a green backlit screen with the signal strength on the left side and the volume on the right side. So I go back with Nokia, but, of course they didn't innovate and create new things like you just said. But I'm very excited to see the devices, and nice to see them, dedicated to Windows Phone 7. So this should make next year very. This year they're coming out with a couple of devices, but next year they'll probably is when they'll really be launching some devices. And
that was a bold move on their part, but I think it certainly needed to be done. I heard the CEO of Nokia talking about. I forgot his name.
Stephen Elop.
Yeah, Stephen Elop. I heard him talking about how he talked to the head of the operating system division. What was it called? The Nokia OS. Well, anyway, the guy that was
Symbian.
Yeah, the guy that was head of the Symbian operating system division just said, "No, we need to kill it. It needs to die."
And it's good to be honest, because you look at a company like RIM and you wonder, are they really being honest with themselves?
Right.
I think his quote of the decade would be, "Our platform is burning. We need to get off and do something else before we complete everybody sinks." So that was a bold move for him, and hopefully they put out math devices and come out with them. So
there's a couple of different things I want to make sure we do hit, because I've gotten you way off topic here. What do you see Windows Phone 7 and Windows 8? They look an awful lot like each other to me. Are they the same code base? Are they going to merge? I mean, it doesn't sound like they're supposed to, but Windows 8 is going to be for tablets and PCs, but Windows Phone 7 is for phones. But is 8 going to pull them together?
I think what you're seeing is the beginning of, if you look at these rockets that are launching, and then by the time they get to outer space, they'll merge together and form Voltron, and then be able to fight injustice. I think what you're looking at is the beginning of a merging of all the platforms, and I think eventually you'll see Windows 8 being the OS that runs Xbox, that runs tablets, and that runs the phone. Right now, they're all kind of on their own thing, but they're moving in a direction where they can be one with different UIs on top to handle different things.
Because, it's not that different, is it?
Well, Windows 8, and I know you installed and played around with it, is Windows 8. It's the next version of Windows. It doesn't really have the phone OS. However, the layer on top, which is the new UI, is a Metro UI, which is what.
So they're both Metro, Windows 8 and Windows Phone 7. Okay. So from a UI perspective, it could have a different code base underneath. I got you.
Exactly, but the stylings is based off the same thing. You have the nice tiles that update you with information, and what they're calling is Metro like. is what they're calling it, but because it's not, I'm sure it's probably not the exact same code base, but I'm sure they're taking from each other and doing, but making them look the same, because you're going to see that same Metro style tile icon on Xboxes soon, and probably within the next couple of weeks, that should hit the new Xboxes. And so what you're going to see is people becoming very familiar with that UI on three different platforms. So that makes it the learning curve to switching around from devices or picking up a Windows phone very short because you've seen it on your desktop computer. You've seen it on your Xbox, you know, which is the best-selling console 15 out of the last 16 months from a gaming standpoint. So when you start
The Metro UI is on the Xbox?
It's coming.
Oh, okay.
In the next couple of weeks, you'll see that UI on the Xbox. So, and the purpose of that is because they have that Kinect where you can use your hand to, sure, you know, select the tile.
So would be great for the Metro UI. Yeah.
Exactly. So okay, it just makes sense.
I want to get off of this because I'm looking at the clock here. We don't have too much more time, but I want to get into a couple other important things. How do the OS upgrades work for Windows Phone 7? I know we talked about the control freak Apple way and this random fragmentation going on over in Android where, you know, depending on how many letters are in the name of your phone, whether you get the latest version of ice cream or whatever, where does Windows Phone 7 fit in that?
And it just like everything else, in the middle. So the first upgrade for Windows Phone 7, I mean, to be honest, was terrible.
I heard it was a bit of a disaster.
It was a disaster. What turned out to be the problem was Samsung came out with, although they looked the same, they were not the same on the inside. They had a slightly different hardware. Microsoft didn't know that. And so the updates were failing on some of the versions of these devices, which was, you know, which was not supposed to happen. You know,
wasn't in their plan?
Inform Microsoft. No. You know, and so that's kind of the thing you run into when you try to allow carriers to create different devices, but on the other side, you know, you want to lock it down so that you can have a smooth process. So this time around, when the updates came out, if you want to talk about something that was night and day, I mean, they're already touting that within, I think, 10 days, 20% of the devices that exist are already running Mango. That's unbelievable.
20%?
Considering what they went through.
In how
20%?
Long?
20%. 10 days, I believe.
That's really impressive. So is it an over-the-air update, or do you have to plug in to do it?
You have to tether to do it. So you can get the update over the air saying that you have an update, and then
you get a notification saying there's an update? Oh, okay.
Yeah, you should get it.
Again, that's kind of a good compromise. With OS 10, with iOS, you have to plug it in to find out whether you have an update. And I know people who've never plugged in.
Right.
That's one of the reasons they're going to do over-the-air updates with iOS 5 is like all these people are just walking around with the original version of OS 10.
Right, which, you know, how can you... Yeah,
I'm sorry, of in, iOS, I did it again.
So, but, you know, we just looked at this and one of our listeners described it as a shock and awe update process. And I don't think you can find a better term for
it's really that
update.
Different.
I
mean, so this is Mango, right?
Yes, the Mango. So what happened was, you know, you didn't know everybody's prodding the carriers. When are the updates coming out? And they're like, very soon, very soon. And then the day that the update hit, it hit for all the carriers at the same time.
Oh.
AT&T, Verizon, Sprint, T-Mobile all got the updates at the same time. And they started just rolling out. People were just updating their phones. But what they did, Microsoft actually throttled the update. So they said, we're going to do 10% of devices in the first week. They will open that up to like 50%, and then, you know, then they will open it up to the rest. They did want to control it in a manner just in case there was a little hardware difference that they ran into again, but that wasn't the case. People are running Mango. Few issues here and there that are cropping up from what I'm seeing, but just the sheer update process, kudos to Microsoft for nailing
that's a classic Microsoft thing, right? They do it really badly the first time out, and then the second time is flawless.
You know what? You're exactly correct on that. You're exactly correct. And, you know, and look at Android phones. I've talked to people who still haven't received an update on their
Well, and they may never get one. That's so frustrating.
Right, exactly.
I can't imagine going, well, I want the new OS, so I got to get a new phone every time.
But, you know, and that falls into what the carriers want. The carriers want you buying new devices, but not so you have to buy a new device because they want to lock you into another contract.
Right. So talk more about Mango. You know, what does Mango give you that you didn't have before?
So Mango's update, and the beautiful thing about Mango is most people that look at the phone don't even know that there was an update because there's nothing that was drastically changed from a UI standpoint that you can't find the updates. However, you now have multitasking in the phone. So if you press and hold the back key, you get kind of the card-based look like a web OS.
Now you got to go back to that AT&T salesman, though, and educate him again.
Oh, don't think I'm not planning to go up there and go beat somebody up. I mean, come on. So, you know, it shows you the last five applications you had running. You can select one.
Oh, just the last Microsoft, five. That's nice.
Right, because Microsoft, they're trying to do something in between. So they want to allow you multitasking, but if you know, you get to that sixth app, the oldest one drops off because chances are you're probably not going back to it. And I'm sure feedback and usability will tell whether they need to expand it or make that a setting to expand that. But as of right now, it's just,
you know, with iOS, they aren't truly background processing, but there's something in between. But there's some, in general, I leave everything running, no big deal. But then I found out there's some really weird aberrations happen if you do that. Like, somebody told me that they went into the Apple store to they had a problem that their home button didn't work. And the genius said, well, here, just close all the running applications in the background. And then it worked. And I'm like, yeah. Oh, that's not true. That's ridiculous. What could that possibly have to do with a physical button working? So fast forward about a month, and my son calls me and goes, Mom, my home button's not working. I said, try this. And he goes, wow, that fixed it. Well, what the heck is what? A physical hardware button doesn't work because of running applications that aren't really running in the background. I don't know.
Right. And Mango handles it almost as similar to what iOS is doing, where you have services that the applications have to subscribe to be able to download things in the background. But Microsoft has put some hard things in there.
I would love to have it stop at five, or even, I mean, even better, say, how many would you like to keep running? Maybe I want eight.
Right, that to me.
That's it.
Yeah, is the best method. But, you know, it's right now it's limited to five. But it works great. I mean, they do the quick resume where you come back to right where you left off at, which is what everybody wants.
Sure.
Anyway, so.
But I've been deleting applications since we started this conversation, and I'm not done yet. And they take like a split second apiece to delete. I'm still going. Oh, wow. I'm probably through my 10th screen, so I probably had 40 applications in the background there. But not really in the background, but sort of in the background.
Right. So, yeah, no, it's limited to five. Nice. So, and you keep your phone. And the one thing Microsoft touts and they fight for above everything else is user experience. They want the phone always to be fast. They always want it to be fluid, and they don't want people to have to reboot the phone and start doing all these
crazy things. By the way, rebooting the iOS phones does not clear those out. They're still there.
Oh, wow.
I would love to, because that'd be faster than what I just finished doing, but...
The cool thing about Windows Phone is if you hit the back button, it basically, that's how you close an application, is by backing out of it. So, and if you just hit the home button to go launch something else, that's what puts it into the background task where it saves
its
state.
Nice.
So that's pretty cool. So you don't ever have to worry about, did you close it? You know, it doesn't matter anyway, because it's only going to be five anyway.
That's cool. All right. So as we start to close out here, what would you like to see Windows Phone 7 do in the future? Where would you like to see it go and adapt?
I definitely want to see more platforms. So you already, like I mentioned before, you're starting to see, you'll see it on Xbox pretty soon. You'll see it on Windows pretty soon. But the one thing I'd love to see is better third-party accessory. That's the one thing that puts Apple over the top every time, is that it's not an app, but there's an accessory for it. You know, if you want to plug it into your toilet paper, you got a toilet paper dongle that you can plug your iPhone into and make the toilet paper count better. You know, there's everything, you know, for an iPhone. There's all kinds of accessories. Android's starting to see it a little bit. I don't know if Microsoft has to build it themselves or just pay these accessory manufacturers to create the same type of things for Windows Phone. But that's another thing that allows for that huge adoption are the accessories that are specific.
Interesting. Even though you have to license the connector, right? I mean, it's not like they used a standard USB connector. They license it, and yet I think a lot about how many people are employed because Apple changes things so quickly. Like, I remember the Nano, they moved the headphone jack something like 2 millimeters. Which meant all of these things, these devices had to, accessories had to be redesigned. And and at first I thought, oh, that must drive those people crazy. And I'm thinking, no, they get to sell more stuff now.
Oh, of course. I mean, I'll never forget. You know, I had the original iPod Touch. I had the original iPod, and nothing irked me more is then when they switched the cable where my charge cable wouldn't work on the new one. That was the beginning of the end.
But think how many people were employed, sure, Chris. Come on.
Yeah, I'm sure. But, you know, I employed them by buying it. That's the extent of my contract with them.
At least that's your checkbook. There you go. And so what else? So you'd like to see third-party accessory manufacturers start to go crazy a little bit. What else? You said something about the Zune Music Service.
Yes. Thanks for reminding me. I definitely, and this is something that no one else is really doing, I want to see Microsoft put the Zune on the iPhone. I want to see them put Zune on Android. I want to see them put Zune on BlackBerry. So Zune is Microsoft for Windows Phone 7's music service, and it's essentially a subscription-based service. They just recently changed the terms of how it was working. Before, you get to keep 10 songs a month. They're dropping that part and they're lowering the price. So it's just $9 a month. And if you want a song, you just download it and you keep it on your phone forever, you know, until the next one, and until you want the next one. And, you know, you can either stream it or you can download it to your phone. So you have it.
Wait, I thought you couldn't download. I thought I heard on the podcast last week that you had to, that they got rid of the by getting 10 songs a month free or whatever.
Yeah. So the 10th song was for you to keep the song forever. So you, it's like buying an MP3 from Amazon. That's what they took out of it. You can still physically download the song.
Oh, okay. So you can be out of Wi-Fi area and still be able to play the song, but you don't own it yet. Got you.
Exactly. And now the new terms, you won't own it. You just have it physically on your phone, so you don't have to stream it anymore. And you can share it between, I think it's 3 devices. So I can download a song and I can play it on my Xbox. I can play it on my computer. I can play it on my phone.
I think I remember it being 4 from what you guys said in the show. But I could be wrong. I'm just remembering what you guys said. I remember you guys debating how many it was, and I thought you guys paper, scissors, rock till you got to 4.
Yeah, we're all too dumb to keep up with the details.
All right, so, last question. How's battery life with Wi-Fi and Bluetooth on?
So this is a huge thing, but I tell you what, my Wi-Fi and Bluetooth are on all day, and I do get a day's.
Now, is it a 4G phone?
So,
it is not there a 4G phone. I think it's 4G that's killing Android.
Android had battery issues long before 4G came out. But 4G did not help. You know, 4G just basically threw a bowling ball through the bottom of the boat, sinking that battery. So it's definitely had its issues before, but 4G is not helping out.
I'm convinced that's why Apple hasn't come out with a 4G phone. I mean, I think they're not willing to come out with a phone that you have to fiddle with so much.
Right. And the one thing about Apple is they don't have the removable battery, so they could essentially design it to make a bigger battery, but... You know, those things get hot. You know, and the one thing I've always loved about any phone that I've owned is the ability to carry multiple batteries.
You know, I used to be in that camp, Chris. I had a 2008 MacBook Pro, and I thought, man, I really don't want to get that new MacBook Pro because I won't be able to carry spare batteries like I do now. But I went from a 2-hour battery to like a 6 or 7 hour battery. And I'm like, now I don't care. Right. You know, do you find yourself wishing you had a spare battery for your iPad? No, because it lasts a day and a half, you know? So I don't think Apple will do it. I saw a thing on, was it a Nontech? Now, I can't remember exactly where it was, but they were talking about the process, I forget how many nanometer process it is that they're trying to go down to that will give a 4G radio that does not suck battery like crazy. So I think Apple... they were predicting wouldn't come out with the iPhone 5 until they could get that chip in there, and that's probably looking like probably third quarter of next year by the time that'll work.
Right, and that makes sense. I watched the announcement, and I got excited because they didn't announce anything that was, to me...
You liked the announcement because it wasn't good.
Exactly. I'm a Windows guy. I'm not an Apple guy, and I respect what they do, but I'm rooting for my platform. So when I saw their announcements and just started giggling a little bit, you know, that was it. I was just like, you know, Windows Phone is on its way.
Right. Well,
so,
you know, that's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on is because I really am a firm believer in competition. I mean, I hope Apple continues to kick butt and Apple continues to outperform everybody else like they have been. But they wouldn't be doing it if they didn't have somebody nipping at their heels. So I'd love to see Windows Phone 7, you know, chomping on them and along with Android and keep them moving fast. And I think it's exciting that there are other alternatives that are so different, like Windows Phone 7.
But if you look at some of the updates in iOS 5, right, the new camera feature where you can use your camera right from the lock screen, that's directly coming from
Nice.
Windows Phone 7.
Nice.
That's a built-in touted feature by Microsoft. Now, Microsoft has a hardware camera button. They're using but it doesn't matter. That is coming from Windows Phone 7.
And then they're stealing the notifications feature. Well, they actually stole that from a jailbreak guy and his icon, but that's built into Android. So, again, I think they ought to be allowed to steal 20%, but 80% has to be completely original. That ought to be the rule.
Yeah. They missed the original part of the camera part, but you know what? Hey, it made it better. So, you know what? Hats off to them. We've always, you know, I work for a software company, so we've always felt that if people are copying you, then they're still behind you. So, you know, people are copying iPhone, iOS, and that's all.
All right. Well, I promised I'd cut you off at 40 minutes, and we're at 47 now, so that's good. That means we were having fun, like I said. Chris, why don't you tell people how they can find you?
All right. I'm Chris Ashley. I usually are on the Simple Mobile Review podcast. We record Tuesday nights, and we put them up on Wednesday morning. You can find us on www.simplemobilereview.com. We tend to cover all the technology.
Do you write articles there, too?
I do write for them. I'm probably the worst writer because I tend to write in slang the way you hear me talking on the podcast. But you know what?
It's real.
I try to write fun. I try to write the way I feel.
How about on Twitter?
And Twitter, you can find me at @BigCashley. That's at BigCashley.
Great. Hey, Chris, I really appreciate you coming on. This is exciting. I learned a lot about Windows Phone, so I will be more educated when I mock it.
Thank you very much. I want to make sure if you're going to mock my platform, you can at least mock it and know what you're talking about.
All right. We'll talk to you again soon, Chris. Well, Switcher Mark in the chat room says that he went out and got some music to listen to instead of listening to Chit Chat Across the Pond on account of it being about Windows Phone 7 phone 7 phone. But I hope the rest of you guys stuck in there and listened. I thought it was really interesting, and I had a lot of fun talking to Chris. I think he's a great guy, and I get a big kick out of him. All right, well, that's going to have to wind us up for this week. Many thanks to our sponsors. Please go over to check them out and help me pay the bills here. Screen Steps and Smile. Don't forget to send in your dumb questions, comments, and suggestions by emailing me at allison@podfeet.com. Follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/podfeet. I contribute a fair amount over on Google+ nowadays, so just search for me by name if you want to circle me up. If you want to join in the fun of the live show, and I really recommend it, it's a lot of fun on over there, go on over to podfeet.com/live on Sunday nights at 5 p.m. Pacific time, which is also known as, 5 plus 8 is 13, plus 3 is 16, minus 12 is 4 in the morning in Finland for Henry, and he comes to the live show. So 2 in the morning. Anyway, I'm not good at math. You know that. So anyway, if Henry can get there, I think you guys can get there. So come on over and join the friendly and enthusiastic Nosilla Castaways. Thanks for listening, and stay subscribed.